And then we left off at paragraph. I think paragraph two. These next four, three paragraphs are really intense, in the sense that they tend to sound very, very abstract. And sometimes the course to me does that. It'll say something that's way different from the way that we're used to thinking, which is what turns me on about it. So, just to give us a chance to see if we can wrap our mind around a very unusual concept. It says, in order to understand the teaching learning plan of salvation, which is healing, it's necessary to grasp the concept of time that the Course sets forth. Atonement, which is the correction of error, corrects illusions, not the truth. Therefore, atonement, which is the correction, is actually correcting what never was, because it never was true to begin with. It never was real to begin with. It says further, the plan for this correction was established and completed simultaneously, for the will of God is entirely apart from time, so is all reality being of God. In other words, the instant the idea of separation entered our minds, in that same instant was God's answer given. So in time, this happened very long ago. In reality, it never really happened at all. I'm going to go ahead and go through it, and then I'll just kind of touch on what it's saying. Says the world of time is the world of illusion, which means what happened long ago seems to be happening now. Choices made long since appear to be open and yet to be made. What has been learned and understood and long ago passed by is looked upon as a new thought, a fresh idea, a different approach. Because your will is free, you can accept what has already happened at any time you choose, and only when you accept what has already happened will you realize that it was always there. As the Course emphasizes, you're not free to choose the curriculum or even the form in which you will learn the curriculum. You are free, however, to decide when you want to learn it, and as you accept it, it's already learned. Time really then goes backward to an instant so ancient that it is beyond all memory and past even the possibility of remembering. Yet because it is an instant that is relived again and again and still again, it seems to be now. And thus it is that pupil and teacher seem to come together in the present, finding each other as if they've never met before. The pupil or the person comes at the right time to the right place. This is inevitable because the pupil made the right choice in that ancient instant which he now relives. So has the teacher too made an inevitable choice out of an ancient past. God's will in everything but seems to take time in the working out. What could delay the power of eternity? So basically, when two people come together, a teaching learning situation begins. For the teacher is not really the one who does the teaching. God's teacher, which is our invisible guide, the Holy Spirit, our sane mind, speaks to any two who join together for learning purposes. The relationship is holy, the relationship is real because of that purpose. And God has promised to send His Spirit into any holy relationship. And a holy relationship is nothing but a relationship in which two people join together to learn how to have real peace and how to have real love. It sounds intense, but that's all it means. Two people coming together to learn how to have peace or how to have love, that's a holy relationship. And then when he says what makes it holy is because of its purpose. So in the teaching learning situation, each one learns that giving and receiving are the same. So basically, the only thing two people are learning in any relationship is that giving and receiving are the same. But ultimately, we're going to get that what we give is what we're going to receive. That's the ultimate lesson that we're going to all learn in any relationship that we're in. And he says the demarcations that we've drawn between our roles, our minds, our bodies, our needs, our interests, all differences that we thought separated us from one another will fade, grow dim, and disappear. Those who would learn the same course share one interest and one goal. And thus he who was the learner becomes a teacher of God himself, because he's made the one decision that gave his teacher to him. He's seen in another person the same interest as his own. So basically, what I got out of that section was that we don't realize it, but we're constantly having opportunities over and over and over again to learn the same lesson. that, to make a long story short, it's like, that's why sometimes we'll say to people, it feels like I've met you before, or this feels real familiar, or we have deja vu. Well, really, from a really spaced out metaphysical perspective, the Course says what we're really doing is reliving the same instant. Anybody seen that movie Groundhog Day?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Okay, that'll just run the whole thing of what that page just got to say, and how he was just repeating the same thing over and over and over again until he changed. That's what the Course is saying we're doing. We're living Groundhog Day, but we don't realize it, that we're doing the same thing, that we're having the same experience. That's why it feels so familiar. That's why when you meet somebody, you feel like you've met them before, or why you're so attracted to one person, but you're not attracted to another person, because this is a person that you've had the same learning opportunity over and over again, and you're going to see if you get a chance to do it differently this time. So until we do it differently, we just keep reliving the same things. And so he was saying that every time we come together, then we have another opportunity to join together for learning purposes. And the way you can tell when you're really getting the lesson is that you won't be focusing on the differences between you and the relationship. What you start focusing on is the things you have in common and what's the same about each other and what you can focus on about each other that joins, rather than constantly focusing on the differences. Like all those books that say stuff like, you know, the men are from Mars, women are from Venus. And so what you're really doing is having pointed out how different men and women are, which explains that if you focus on differences, of course men and women are going to never get along. You know what I'm saying? We know we have external differences, but in order to have peace, we're going to have to focus on having the same purpose, having the same goal, or getting in touch with the things that we both have in common that we want to focus in on, which is that we both want peace. I don't care if you're a man or a woman, we both want peace, we both want love, we both want happiness. So a holy relationship is just where two people decide to use their relationship to bring them more peace, as opposed to using their relationship to create more conflict. And it's not just talking about a romantic relationship, it's talking about any relationships that we have with anybody. Anytime you come together, it's a teaching learning situation like us. Like, this is a holy relationship because we came together to learn. Anybody got any questions about that paragraph, I mean about that section? That, like I said, that can sound like a pretty abstract section. And but if you got any questions about it, I'd be glad to talk more about it. Have you ever had that feeling of deja vu? Like, you know, you've been someplace you supposedly have never been to before, but
all the time.
All the time, yeah. It's like people that you've met, and you know, you can always kind of tell those people. You just go to an instant level of some kind of either really liking them or disliking them, and you don't even know why. All of a sudden, you know, you're having this reaction, and the person's just walked in the door. And what you don't realize is, well, here's another opportunity to forgive. This just shown up to see if you're going to do it. Can you do it differently this time? And especially, the Course said that's true in special relationships. You know, like anybody that you're in a special relationship is definitely someone that reminding you something of the past that you've got to have an opportunity to work through. So how y'all doing? How y'all doing this time around?
It's better this time around.
It's better this time around. Good, good, good. I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I got so many people from the past coming. In this lifetime, I must have really wanted to wipe out a lot of karma, because if you're teaching, that basically means everybody that comes to my class, you know, we've met before. You know, so I'm constantly, like, I've had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people to see if we were going to do it again and come together for a teaching-learning situation. So I don't know what we did before, but let's just all forgive each other. It's just all, we don't even need to know, do we? And that make the forgiveness a lot easier, I think.
Are you saying it's always because you need to forgive, or you need to work out an issue?
Which is the same thing.
Or could it be a positive thing that you are just continuing?
It can be all three of those. It can be all of those. You can be continuing, but you want to continue in terms of growth and in terms of love.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can be a situation where you need to forgive each other and you're giving yourself another chance to forgive each other.
Mm-hmm.
So either we're coming together to continue to grow, or we're coming together to still continue to grow, but it involves overlooking or forgiving something that we thought we did to each other. And some people, you can feel that. You know, I have several friendships that are like that I know that... It was like we came here and we knew that we wanted to go to a higher level of consciousness and spiritual reality together.
Yeah.
And then we literally talked that way. Like, there there are people in my life that I have conversations with, and we joke during the conversation that if somebody heard our conversation, they would think that we were insane. They would literally think that we were insane because the way we were talking is so different from the way most people talk, because we don't see it as if our life just started this time around. You know, and you can sense that you there's an eternal validity to the soul. My ego personality called Earl, yeah, that one is needed, this one, and that one will be gone when this is over. But my soul identity has always been, you know. Mm-hmm. And so as you begin to wake up to who you really are, you get more and more in touch with your soul identity as opposed to your personality mm-hmm. identity, you know. And so when you're around people, other people that are getting in touch with their soul purpose and soul identity, it creates a whole nother level of relationship.
Right.
And a whole nother
level.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm in one of those right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. The course calls them either special love relationships or special hate or special fear relationships. It's just as true of the people you can't stand as the people that you love. You know, it's like both of those are people that you're giving yourself another chance to see if you're going to do it differently this time.
Mm-hmm.
And if through your own individual spiritual work, you come to the conclusion that they on their own come to the conclusion that they need to change it, and then you on your own come to the conclusion that you need to change it, then when you come together, you probably will want to forgive. You probably will want to go, hey, I don't want to keep this energy going. What do we need to do to let this go? Whatever it is, I want to love this time. I want peace this time. You know? Yeah. So that's a holy relationship. It's just a relationship where two people come together to learn the truth about each other. Hey, we're on page 7 in the teacher's manual. So as soon as he says, so at the end that he says, as soon as you see another person is having the same interest that you have, then that's when you draw the higher teacher into your experience, when you want everybody to benefit. Now this next section right here is awesome to me. It's one of my favorite ones. It's called What Are the Levels of Teaching? And then he says, well, a teacher of love has no set teaching level. Each teaching learning situation involves a different relationship at the beginning, although the ultimate goal is always the same, to make of the relationship a holy relationship. And in a holy relationship, he says, is just a relationship in which both people look at each other as sinless or innocent. There's no one from whom a teacher of God can learn, so there's no one whom a teacher of God can teach. However, from a practical point of view, you can't meet everyone, nor can everyone find you, right? So since you can't meet everybody at this level, and everybody can't meet you at this level, then God's plan includes very specific contacts to be made for each teacher of God. There are no accidents in salvation. Those who are to meet will meet, because together they have the potential of a holy relationship. In other words, we're ready for each other. So that paragraph tells me that we are meeting each other because it is in the divine plan for us to meet each other, and that all the contacts that we make are very specific contacts, because we're ready for, that's why we met each other as opposed to everybody else we didn't meet, is that we were assigned to each other, whether we recognize it or not. Everybody we meet is part of the divine plan for us to meet them. We never accidentally meet anybody. We never accidentally happen to meet anybody, but everybody that we meet has given us another opportunity to have a healed relationship. Whew. If people knew that, it seems to me that it would take so much effort away from the energy that people put into going out to find somebody. That whole energy, I'm going to go out here and find me a friend or find me a mate. If you really knew that, if you really knew that people were assigned to you and their purpose in being assigned to you was to help you remove the blocks, help you remove the fear, even though it may not seem like it at first, that's exciting to me. I'd much rather meet someone that was in divine order as opposed to, but then now I know everybody is. That's kind of weird too, because I can't meet anyone that's not in divine order. Because like I would go, well, maybe I met them, but they weren't who I was supposed to meet. And he's saying, well, no, it's not like that. Anybody you've ever met your whole life was a specific contact that you were supposed to make. So people are giving us opportunities over and over and over and over and over again to wake up. Everybody that we meet. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, 6 opportunities right here. You know, he said every time we're together, we save 100 years of time. If for every minute we're together, we could save 100 years of time. You know, so that's powerful. I mean, right in here, we got 600 years we can knock out of learning. You know what I'm saying? That's a trip. We can learn really fast. So then he goes into, well, what are the levels of teaching? Well, first of all, I'm going to meet somebody I'm supposed to meet, and we're going to get an opportunity to heal. Okay, what would be the levels of teaching? He says the simplest level of teaching appears to be quite superficial. It consists of what seem to be very casual encounters, a chance meeting of two apparent strangers in an elevator, a child who's not looking where he's going running into an adult by chance, two students happening to walk home together. These are not chance encounters. Each of them has the potential for becoming a teaching learning situation. Perhaps the seeming strangers in the elevator will smile to one another. Perhaps the adult would not scold the child for bumping into him. Perhaps the students will become friends, even at the level of the most casual encounter. It is possible for two people to lose sight of separate interests if only for a moment. If we lose sight of separate interests for only for a moment, that would be enough. Salvation has come. I get in the elevator and I said to the guy, what floor do you want me to punch? Okay, I lost sight of separate interests just for a second. It wasn't about what floor I was going to go on. It was like, hey, I'm looking out for your interest too. What floor do you want to go on? Like he's saying, if two people lose sight of separate interests, even if for a moment, that was a healing. You know, I've had so many incredible encounters on elevators. It's weird in my building lately. You know, got on the elevator with this guy that looked like he was part of a motorcycle gang. I'm riding down the elevator, and he said to me something like, brother, you know, we really got to realize we're just one and really love each other, and that there's no differences between any of us. We just got to overlook that. That doesn't matter what your religious or spiritual background is. We ultimately are one. And then he says, have a nice day. Then he got off there. I mean, it's like I'm having that kind of stuff happen to me, and it's tripping me out. You know, I had it happen just Saturday night, same thing. It's like right now, I'm really experiencing what appears to be strangers being total channels for the truth in a way that it can't possibly be an accident, or it can't possibly be. It's just, I like when my life gets strange. I get weary when it doesn't, when it's not strange. If it gets real normal, something is wrong. You know what I'm saying? And so right now it's going back to weird. And I'm feeling more comfortable now. Things are beginning to get weird again, where things are happening that aren't supposed to happen. And things are just the synchronicity and things falling in place, and people just reflecting back the truth and reflecting back love. Anybody else having more of that in their experience? Am I the only one right now? You having the same thing?
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, ridiculously so.
Oh, I was just giving an example.
In words of the recently departed Hunter S. Thompson, it's still not weird enough for me.
That's great. I love it.
It's still not weird enough for me.
That's a great thing.
That's good. He was a trip from the little bit I read about him. So that's the first level. Okay, so the first level of teaching is going to be a superficial level. Then he says the next level, he says, that it's difficult to understand the levels of teaching the universal course as a concept is meaningless in reality as it is in time. The illusion of one permits the illusion of the other. In time, the teacher of God, that's us, we seem to begin to change our mind about the world with a single decision. Now, what we do is we wake up and we say, you know, I'm really ready to think differently. That's my single decision, right? Then he says, then we learn more and more about the new direction as we teach it or demonstrate it. So first I want to change my mind, then I learn more about my new direction as I'm willing to demonstrate the new direction. So if my new direction is love or my new direction is peace, then I learn more and more about it as I demonstrate it, which is the same as teaching it. So whatever I make a decision about, then if I want to learn it, I've got to demonstrate it more and more and more. That makes sense. Most people are doing just the opposite. They'll make a decision and then they want everybody else to change. I want to be a more loving person. I will be when you change and you change and you change and you change and you change. And then as you change, then I'll change. When you change, I'll change. You ever had anybody say that to you? Right. So the average person doing just the opposite. They're making a decision to have more love in their life, but their decision is based on the idea that everybody around them's got to change so that they can love them more. While a conscious being is doing just the opposite, they're saying, I want to change, and then I'm going to start trying to demonstrate the change that I want to have. which is a little bit less popular. It doesn't actually turn most people on, I noticed, you know. But actually, when you start to do it, the results are so fantastic that you'll start to get motivated. It's like, as I do that more and more in my experience, they're not making anybody feel guilty. Understanding that we don't know, that I don't know, you don't know, we're doing the best we can. You know what I'm saying? Let's just keep trying to move toward love no matter what. That seems to work so much more easily and better than the old way. Why does it take so long? You know what I'm saying? It's like, why does it take so long to get that one? Because when it's so obvious that you can't change anybody else.
Yeah. Well, it's like you know, Wayne Dyer, right?
Mm-hmm. What's that?
When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's so interesting that people actually, even though they never had success at that, the desire to keep doing it is phenomenal. I mean, even though I don't know anybody that's successfully been able to change everything outside of themselves in order to be happy, it's amazing how much we bitch and complain about who is it I need to change in order for me to feel better in this situation and circumstance. And I've done it too. And it's like, I'm retarded or, you know, it's like, why is that so? It's such an obvious truth that if there's anybody's perception I can work on the easiest, it would literally be my own. If I really wanted an easy life, then I would dedicate my life to accepting the truth for myself. And the Course is saying you would dedicate yourself to accepting the truth for yourself and getting everybody else to God. And if I was really doing that, I really would not be having as much worry or upset or concern. So I need somebody to help me remember that, to continue to support me in that idea. I can see why a lot of times A Course in Miracles ends up in garbage cans and burned up and thrown off of bridges and stuff like that I've heard people tell me they're done with it. Because it puts so much of the responsibility on the person for their own happiness and their own peace. Whew, that's not a popular concept around here. He says, oh yeah, that's cool. He says, it's difficult to understand the levels of teaching the universal course as a concept is meaningless in reality as it is in time. Okay, we've covered the illusion of time already, but the illusion of levels of teaching seems to be something different. Perhaps the best way to demonstrate that these levels of teaching can't really exist is simply to say that any level of the teaching learning situation is part of God's plan for the atonement, and God's plan has no levels, being a reflection of God's will. Salvation, or the opportunity for healing, is always ready and always there. God's teachers work at different levels, but the result is always the same. There are not different levels. There is just one level, and it's just the learning level. And we love to divide it up. And I'm on a higher level than you are. But the Course is saying, no, there's just one level. We're all learning. That's the only level all of us are on. I can get to that. He says, if you can see me, then I'm still learning. If I can see you, then you're still learning. So that equality helps get rid of the ego. You know, if I see Wayne Dyer, he's just like me. He's learning. He's not better than me. He's not less than me. He's here. So he's still learning. No matter what he's saying, no matter what I'm saying, no matter how good it sounds, no matter how conscious it sounds, if I'm in the world and everybody sees me, then I'm just like everybody else in the world. I'm dealing with the exact same issues that everybody else is. I just have my own flavor. Mine just has, yours is red, mine is blue, but it's the same lesson. So he said each teaching learning situation is maximal in the sense that each person involved will learn the most that he can from the other person at the time. He said, in this sense, and in this sense only, we can speak of levels of teaching. So the second level of teaching would be a more sustained relationship in which, for a time, two people enter into a fairly intense teaching-learning situation and then appear to separate. As with the first level, these meetings aren't accidental, nor is what appears to be the end of the relationship a real end. Again, each has learned the most he can at the time. Yet all who meet will someday meet again, for it's the destiny of all relationships to become holy. God is a mistake in his son. So the first level is superficial, like in an elevator. But the second level is where two people come together for a while, have a really intense teaching learning situation, and appear to separate. And the Course says that all that means is you came together, you learned as much as you could from each other at that time. And then at some point we all meet again and we all healed again. What happens is that people come together, they learn as much as they can from each other and appear to separate, and then the world says you're supposed to feel guilty. Because somehow or another it means you can't do relationships, there's something wrong with you because that relationship didn't last forever. And the truth is, it's more normal to come together and separate and come together and separate and come together and separate than to form a relationship with one person or any person and it lasts for a lifetime. So again, in most cases, we're making ourselves feel guilty about a very natural joining and a very natural party. So when I first read that, it sure helped me feel good about a lot of relationships in my experience. And to realize that the pain that we go through in relationships really, in most cases, come from trying to keep it together at the point you learn as much as you can, and then it's time to separate. And if you talk to most people, that is where their pain is coming from. They're trying to force something to be that's not really meant to be. And that's why they're upset. That's why they're mad. If I really lived my life the way this book was saying all the time, it would be just amazing how little conflict would be in my life. But it would take such guts because it's so different. Yeah, it takes guts to live this because people are going to accuse you of being irresponsible or being cold or, you know, because you won't play the game. You won't play the guilt game. You won't play the pain game. You won't allow yourself to be manipulated. And so that really makes manipulators angry when they're trying to manipulate you, but you won't let yourself be manipulated by the guilt. And they say you don't care and that you're cold or you're a callous person, which I think is funny. I'm a callous person because I will not allow you to manipulate me. So I'm selfish. Interesting.
I also feel like a lot of times I always have that part of me that feels like I'm going to have to give up something, that I'm going to have to sacrifice something by doing this. Even though I know when I've done it 100 times, it has improved everything. I'm going to have to give up having fun, or I'm going to have to give up this or that, you know. And even though I know on another level that's not the truth.
And that's why the most important thing that we could do in our relationship with each other is reinforce the idea of each other's innocence. Because when you start realizing that it's okay for you to be yourself, that's going to be the only thing that you're going to have to fight, is the temptation to feel guilty. Especially if everybody else is still in the suffering, sacrificing mode. And you're choosing to step out of that paradigm. And you actually see how much easier your life goes when you step out of that paradigm. You have to deal with your own feelings of guilt trying to come up because you're having it so much easier than most of the people around you. And then you realize the only reason why you're having it easier than them is just the way you're thinking. That's it. The reason why your life is easier is not because you got more this or more that. It's just you're taking an entirely different approach than they're taking. And since you love them, you don't want them to suffer, right? And so then you get into this thing where I ought to be able to help them out of their suffering. And then you get to the next level that you realize that they use their suffering as a way of life, that their whole life is defined around their suffering. So actually, if you took their suffering away, they wouldn't have anything to live for because it's the motivation of their whole existence is to fix their problems. So you take their problems away, they don't really know what to do themselves. The book talks about that some people would even want to commit suicide without their problem, but they don't know that. That if they got healed really quick, that it would be the most depressing thing that ever happened to them because they know their way around their misery. They know their way around their judgments. They know their way around all the stuff that they think is their problem. You take them away, and they don't have any purpose anymore in their experience because their whole thing is about fixing what's broken. So it talks about how our happiness waits until we won't attack ourselves for receiving it. And so it really basically boils down to, it's really heavy, is that everybody around us already are as happy as they can be right now. And that's deep. They already are as happy as they could be right now. If it was a bit more happy than what it is right now, then it would actually bring up all of their feelings of unworthiness and they don't deserve it. So it's really happening real slow because that's the only pace they can receive they're good at, is at a real slow pace. Try giving a person a lot of love real fast who's really afraid and suspicious, and watch how quick they rebel against you. They don't embrace you. They head in the opposite direction from you. They think something about you is not genuine and honest, right? So that means that in order for them to trust, this is really crazy, but in order for them to trust, they have to have someone less loving than you. That's wild. That they actually need to have someone that's less loving than you so that they can feel comfortable, because somebody less loving than you, they can relate to. Someone real loving is so far beyond their conception of what they can have that they think that you're deceiving them. And which kind of explains a lot of the relationships I see around me. It's almost like being loving really does protect you. Because a person who really would hurt you would be a person who's really not loving, right? But if a person who's really not loving is threatened by someone who's loving, then they're not going to come towards you. They're going to go away from you. So they just protected you by you being loving. That's one of the things I like about that, is that people who are not ready for love, if you give them space and don't trap them, they'll voluntarily separate. They'll voluntarily go. So many times when people first start to wake up and they go to classes and stuff, they'll say stuff like, you know, a lot of my friends and people I know are dropping out of my life. I'm not even trying to put anybody out of my life, but I don't hear from people that I used to hear from. And they don't realize it's because they're not on that same level of vibration anymore. Mm-hmm. And those people need somebody else to be the way they used to be their friend. And that somebody better is coming, but that in-between state can be frightening because we get so attached to the body of that person. And we don't really realize what you really want is the content. I want the love and healing people around. So any questions about those first two levels, or any comments, any thoughts?
I do think that is a cool part of it, that as you start vibrating higher and thinking this way, that you are definitely protected from people that will drag you down and you know, they aren't thinking like you are. It's incredible to watch that process.
It is.
It's amazing.
Have you noticed it? Have you all noticed it at all in your experience?
Oh yeah, and when you start redefining what being loving means, as opposed, I mean, years ago I used to think that being a loving person was caretaking to everyone else, making sure everyone else was okay, instead of focusing on myself and what I needed to do personally.
Mm-hmm.
It takes care of all those relationships. Those people fall away and they move out of your life, and you don't have to
take care of them.
I think that takes a lot of the pressure off of you. And yeah, so.
Easier to gravitate towards people with a common viewpoint, because the people who haven't been exposed to it and are not open to it, when you hand them their scripts back and tell them they need to do a rewrite, they just get aggravated or frustrated.
Yeah, it's almost like the biggest favor you can do for them is not to act out the script. Because then you're showing, you're helping them come to the realization that they don't have that control over people. When you give in, you're actually helping them to believe that the way to happiness is to get everybody around you to do what you want them to do. But your ego would say you're just being kind and you're being loving to go ahead and give in. But you're really setting that person way back, and you're setting yourself back. And you got to be able to handle their reaction. That's the other thing too, is not to cave in when they use anger to try to get you to give in to their position. Because if you do give in to anger, then what's going to happen next time is they just get more angry. Okay, I just haven't done enough anger, so I'm going to get more angry. So that's the challenge, is when you say no and stick to it for the first time, and then deal with that reaction that you're going to get, and that attempt to make you feel guilty, and that attempt to make you feel like you're doing something wrong, and be steadfast. And then the person gets at some point, you know, attacking this person is not going to give me what I want. And when they see that attacking you won't get them what you want, then they'll voluntarily try a new approach or go to somebody else. So if they really care about you, they're going to change their approach anyway. So that's the scary part. The scary part is when that guilt is trying to make you give in to it. And with relatives and close friends, it's real easy to let that guilt and manipulation stuff work. Especially if I want people to respond to my guilt trip. The least I can do is respond to theirs. So I had to get real clear about not putting mine on somebody. Whew. That was a biggie. Because it definitely seems like it. Sometimes, you know, you have people that it really looks like it works on for a while. And your ego gets totally out of the box. It goes crazy.
It's so easy to see other people's stuff. I notice now that I'm studying the course, I'm looking at all these people in my life going, gosh, you know, if they only take these principles, apply it to their life, it'd be so peaceful.
Uh-huh.
Instead of looking at where I need to apply it to my life. It's just much easier to do that.
And you know something, you know, the flip side of that though, if you and I really trusted each other, I think that's very true. I think it is very easy to see somebody else's ego than it is to see your own ego, right? So if we trusted each other, you know, then if you saw where I was hurting myself, or if you could see my ego, then you really could tell me.
Right.
I care about you. I want you to know this is what I'm perceiving. And if I trusted you and knew that you really wanted my own best interest, then you could save me a whole lot of time because I don't see it like you see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I would choose not to be defensive, then it might be some valuable information and vice versa. So to me, that's the flip side of it, is that if love was at the center of it, then we really could save each other some time. You really could tell your friend, you might want to take a look at it this way or think about looking at it that way. This might be another way to handle it. Because when I'm in, I don't see my ego. In a way, trying to see my own ego would be just like trying to get a fish to see the water. You know, it's like I'm in it. It's my reality. It's where I'm living. I'm living in my perception. You're outside of my perception. So you're in the sense of outside of the bubble that I'm living in. And if I could listen to you, you could probably help me navigate my bubble a lot easier. Yeah. So I'm hoping to establish those kind of relationships, and I find that the defensiveness doesn't happen as much if you really feel like the person truly has your best interests at heart, and they feel like you truly have theirs. You know, you don't get offended as fast. You know. So I'm open to it. And then it goes to like the last level. He says the third level of teaching occurs in relationships which, once these relationships are formed, are lifelong. Okay, so the third level is you do have a lifelong relationship. He says these are teaching learning situations in which each person is given a chosen learning partner who presents them with unlimited opportunities for learning. I love
that's
that. Marriage. Yeah, that's a marriage. or definitely kids.
Children.
Or parents.
Children.
Yeah, right. They're giving me unlimited. My two kids give me unlimited opportunities for learning. You know, because I'm a Course in Miracles teacher with two born again Christian children, and so they constantly test my ability to accept their path and to let them be, you know, because their beliefs are so different from mine that it's hard to believe that they even have my DNA. Really, it's so ironic that, but then it makes perfect sense. You know, if you're going to learn, if your lesson is to learn how to give people the freedom to be themselves and love them the way they are, why wouldn't I, as a teacher of spiritual principles, attract children to me that attest to my ability to do every single one of the things that I'm telling everybody in the class? You know, and I'm doing the same thing for them. It's working both ways because I'm just as much not acting out their script as they're not acting out mine. So we have to constantly go to the heart with each other. We constantly go to the love and not focus on the differences. So we had to do that if we were going to have a relationship. It took us to the level of you got to love each other, you got to respect each other's path, or you're not going to have a relationship at all. So I constantly get that lesson, while at the same time I know I have a lifelong third level relationships. I know they're going to continually give me unlimited opportunities for learning.
You may have our DNA, but they got their own charts.
Yeah, and I really feel that. I've always felt like parents take too much responsibility for how they think their children turn out. It's ridiculous. Their children are just like them. They come in with their own agenda, their own scripts, their own lessons, their own plan, you know. And they actually, the course indicates that what they really need us to do is be ourselves. So strange as it may seem, what my kids really need from me is to be me, even if it drives them bananas. It's like that's what they need. And just like this, and that's exactly what they present me with, the same thing. It's like what I really need to learn my lesson is for them to stay just the way they are and me change my perception. They're forcing me to change my perception, which is the only place that I'm supposed to change anything anyway. So in a sense, they're propelling me further than the people who seem to be so cooperative or who are just like me. You know, it's wild. You know? And then the kids that are like you, like the ones that you have that are really be open to your thought system, then they're going to present you with situations that you never expected either. Because they're going to use the freedom that you're giving them and the new perspectives that you're giving them to create a reality that you would not have created for yourself. So they're still going to give you that same opportunity to see if you're just as open-minded as you say you are. You know, because even in our thinking we're open-minded, most people are trying to be open-minded in the way that they define open-mindedness. Like I was saying in the class Sunday, you know, I was saying some things and I could watch people react. And I said, okay, all open-minded people, stay open-minded. Because we are usually open-minded only about the stuff we're open-minded about. Mm-hmm. But then we'll say, I'm an open-minded person. No, you're not. You're just open-minded about the things you feel like you're open-minded about. But you're surely going to attract somebody to you who's going to push your buttons and let you see where you're not as open-minded as you think you are. It almost would be better to say, you know, I don't know if I'm open-minded. I want to be open-minded. I'm going to see if I can let that part of me come out, you know. So if you have a lifelong relationship, you're really dealing with a person that's giving you unlimited opportunities for learning. And that's the key phrase when the Course says, these relationships are generally few. And so that goes opposite to our society also. You know, it's like we hold it up like you should have a lot of lifelong relationships. Almost like everybody we've ever had a relationship with, we should have a relationship with them for the rest of our lives. And the Course is saying, nah, actually, it's more normal to have come together, separate, and you're going to have a few relationships that last a lifetime. So again, don't beat yourself up if everybody you know is not somebody you've always known or that you're going to always know. And then he says these relationships, their existence implies that those involved have reached a stage simultaneously in which the teaching-learning balance is actually perfect. He says this doesn't mean that the people recognize this. In fact, they generally don't. They may even be quite hostile to each other for some time and perhaps for life. So let's hear that. You know, the truth is, not only are your lifelong relationships few, not only is this person going to give you unlimited opportunities for learning, but the truth is, you all are actually the same. You have a teaching-learning balance. And that's the last thing people want to think of with the person that they feel hostile toward. That the truth is, if you got a lifelong relationship, you have a perfectly balanced relationship. That you all are actually the same. That's why you have been staying together for a lifetime. Because you're the same. Or else you would appear to separate. So why are you staying together for a lifetime if you're really different? You can't be really different in each other's life for a lifetime.
Are you not polar opposites?
What I'm saying is that he's saying that we've reached the stage simultaneously that we both need to learn the same lesson.
Okay.
You know, my kids need to learn the same lesson I need to learn. That's why, even though it looks like we're different, we're not different at all. The same thing I'm working on is the exact same thing they're working on.
I see that. Yeah. I don't
want to
be like.
No, and what the cool part about it is that we're not even being asked to be like each other.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's like the core. It's not asking me to become a born again Christian no more than asking them to become a Course student. The truth is, we're being asked to see each other as innocent for choosing the path that we've chosen. That's the lesson. It's for me to get hey, it's perfectly okay for you to be on the path that's right for you. I don't have to condemn you for that, judge you for that, separate you for that. It's perfectly all right for me to be. I'm innocent for choosing the path that I'm on, and there's nothing wrong for me with me for choosing that. It's like the real learning has to do with how much we see each other as sinless and guiltless, not whether or not we begin to believe each other's thought system. Mm-hmm. That's
so respecting the authentic self.
Yeah. Me respecting your right to be who you are would be me getting the lesson instantly. And that's what's been the trip. It's like, I realize how much easier that is than anything else I could possibly do. I'm just blown away that I always thought that was hard. You know, it's not hard. It's harder for me to change somebody than to let them be who they are. And it's just easier. And I like the easy way. I just don't know. That's what I say. I just must have been retarded most of my life because it is literally easier for me to let them be just the way they are. Period. You know, and the only reason why I can let them do that now is because I want it for myself. And that's what I found out, that it's that you won't give a person something until you want it for yourself. I've seen it in relationships a lot of times where one partner wanted to restrict the freedom of the other one, but as soon as that one also wanted their freedom for any reason, all of a sudden freeing their partner wasn't so hard anymore because they wanted the freedom for themselves. So whatever you want for yourself, it's easier to give to somebody else than something you don't want for yourself. But a person who doesn't need that freedom or doesn't desire that freedom, of course it's going to be hard to give the freedom to somebody else because they think their happiness depends on controlling that other person and keeping them limited. But the ones I want my freedom, you know, I want to go to art class on Thursday night, then all of a sudden your desire to go bowling on Tuesday night becomes a lot more acceptable to me because now I want the freedom. So the minute I wanted to be, then all of a sudden it became easier for me to let my kids be. But I had to really want to be. So it always comes back to what? Me. It always comes back to you're going to give what you want to receive. So the Course says whatever you give is what you're asking for. So I can always tell what's going to come to the people around me by what they give and not by what they say. You know, asking isn't, I used to think asking was me saying, please, God, would you please send some love into my life? From a Course perspective, that's not asking. Those are just words. If I really want to ask for peace, then I got to give it. Now, when I give it, he says I'm asking for it. But until I give it, I'm not really asking for it. And so the Course says giving is asking. And that changed my whole perception of asking. You give it, you're asking for it, you know. It's like people who want prosperity. I talk to people all the time who want more prosperity, but they don't give anything. But they ask for it. Please give me $1,000 a day, God. You know what I'm saying? But they don't give anything. So I have to ask myself, what am I asking for? Then you ask yourself, well, what am I giving all day? Because what I'm giving all day is what the universe sees as me asking for that. And I see people constantly giving what they don't want to receive. All around me. They wonder where it's coming from. They're mad all the time, right? And they're all upset about how life is treating them. But they don't even see that they're absolutely giving it. You know, I'm judging you, man. I'm a nice guy, but I'm judging you. I'm giving you a lot of judgment. I'm giving you a lot of condemnation. But I'm nice. But I'm giving you a lot of judgment and condemnation. Now, why is it that Nice Earl just met this person that's like a butt? You know what I'm saying? It's like a real pain in the butt. Well, I don't realize I've just been giving that to you by my condemnation of you. Even though I think I'm a nice person, just pointing out your flaws. But what I'm actually doing is giving judgment. And so it comes back to me, then I become another nice person wondering why I'm surrounded by so many people that make me mad and upset me. And I don't know that I am giving it so the universe says, well, you must want to receive it. And you could be mad, you could be in a third level relationship and be mad at each other for life. Mm-hmm. Yet, should you decide to learn it, the perfect lesson is before you, it can be learned. And if you decide to learn that lesson, you become the savior of the teachers who falter may even seem to fail. No teacher of God can fail to find the help that he needs. So I could be hostile with you for a lifetime, but if I decided to, we could learn our lesson. We could either be mad at each other for the rest of our life, or at any point in time we could say, hey, you know something? There must be a better way. Or we can stay mad to the day we die. And the book is, I mean, that's what makes it so honest. It's like, yeah, now I'm just be straight up with you. Y'all can hate each other to the day you die, if you choose to. But you could change your mind any day you want to and do it differently. Whew. So those are the three levels. Superficial, intense for a while, learning as much as you can from each other and then appearing to separate. And then having a lifelong relationship where you give each other unlimited opportunities to learn because you got a perfect learning balance going. Whew. That's it. So those are the levels of teaching. Any questions about that section? Anything about that?
What I love, too, is that either way you choose, there's no judgment.
Could you elaborate on that?
That, you know, you can choose to continue in a relationship that is where you're not liking each other, where there's friction, or you can choose to change your mind and look at it differently. But from a course perspective, there's no judgment. From, you know, either way, you either choose to learn the lesson or you don't. But you don't have to feel guilty.
Right.
If you're not thinking you're doing it the right way or you're struggling with it, you know, there's no God judgment. That there's it is what it is. It's a lesson.
Yeah.
You either choose,
yeah, you
to
choose
do it
to do it or not to do it.
So
exactly.
Again, it's exactly. The whole release of guilt and,
yeah,
and that's such a cool angle that I always appreciate.
And that opportunity to do it will always be there if you choose to. Of course it's going to always be there if you choose to do it. You know, it's like, yeah, of course. And then like you said earlier, you'll get another chance because since it's a consciousness issue anyway, you'll draw that same consciousness to you in another body. So even if that person died, you still have to deal with that issue because it's in your mind. So you're going to draw another physical replica of that particular lesson that you need to learn, even if the original person or that person's body or personality is gone. That's why right now I'm noticing that if I can just let people be without guilt and without attack, it seems like everything heals itself. Everything takes care of itself. And I don't know how. I can't describe to you why. All I know is that's the experience that I'm having more and more and more and more and more, you know. And so it's true. Every time I try one of these concepts, it always works. If I really do it, it always works. If I think about doing it, it doesn't. If I analyze it, it doesn't. But if I actually apply it, it works. Okay. Mm-hmm.
You gave an example which certainly makes sense, that if you want more abundance, then to be generous would bring more abundance in. How would you go about something a little more abstract like physical wellness? How can I give health to get health?
By beginning to see yourself as innocent, because all sickness is anger taken out in the body at some level or some form of guilt. So the more that I'm looking at things from a perspective of innocence, the more I'm creating a consciousness of wellness. So it becomes more like a physical attitude. It's like a mental attitude than more so the physical act. And some people keep physical illnesses because they want to learn how to have peace even if their body isn't well. See, everybody's not supposed to be physically healthy. That's deep. Some souls set it up that they want to learn how to keep their center if they have no use of their limbs. Can I still keep my center? Some souls, and that's part of the challenge, is that we're in a society where people think if they have money and if they have health, they must be good people and they must be doing the right thing. And some of the most unconscious people you can ever meet in your life are people who have physical health and have physical material things. They have no consciousness of spirituality whatsoever. And at the same time, they think that they must be doing, God must be showering blessings on them, right? Because, I mean, I got everything, so obviously I must be doing it okay, right? And then the people who don't seem to have those things a lot of times they're the ones who are more likely to question their thinking. They're the ones that's most likely to go, maybe I need to look at this different because I'm so miserable. For a person who has physical comfort, they have a tendency not to go penetrate deeper because they think that just the comfort they feel in itself must mean they must be doing something right, even though that's not true at all. So we choose different levels of our lesson. And it took me a while to get that doing the truth right didn't necessarily mean I was going to get the physical stuff I wanted. I'm really doing the truth correctly when I never lose my center. That's when I'm getting it. It's when I can keep my inner peace. I'm not getting it just because I was able to manifest by tomorrow a brand new car. I'm getting it when I have peace whether I have a brand new car or not. You know, I'm getting it when I have peace whether I have one leg or two. Now that's when I'm getting it, you know. And that's deep. That's different. You know, so even with the health issue, I really don't know what that soul, I'd like to quote, I don't really know what that soul's lesson is. It's not my place to judge them. So what I do for people, I'll go, Holy Spirit, you decide. I don't really know. I mean, I don't know if this person need to have that house they're asking me to help them get. The house could be the worst thing that could ever happen to them. I don't know. So I just say, if it's God's will. Let God's will be in this situation. That's the way I do with people and things. It's like, all I ask for this situation is God's will. I don't know what's best, you know. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know that it's best that person get that house just because they want it. Because I can think of so many things I've manifested in my life that I regretted, as well as things I've manifested that I was totally turned on about. You know what I mean? But at the time I thought I wanted it, you know,
so be careful of what you ask for, you might get it.
Yeah.
And then you go, what the hell was I thinking about?
Yeah, because it is true. I mean, it is true. You will get it. Especially as you begin to open up like you're doing now and studying the truth. You will get it. Before you know it, it will show up. And you'll get a chance to see if you really wanted it or not. It's so many things manifesting in my experience that I've asked for that I'm having to really ask myself, you know, okay, is this really what you want? You know, really, what do you want? Because it's not like it's not going to manifest now. It's going to manifest. Yeah.
Well, and too, like, I'm finding the more that when I'm placing myself in a point where I'm just desiring things, I'm wanting this, I'm wanting that, that just gets big, just my desire for things gets bigger,
mm-hmm.
instead of when I just try and feel like I'm just at peace wherever I am, whatever I have, and whatever I'm doing, and whatever's in my life, then I'm just more peaceful, instead of thinking I want.
And think about this, to add to what you're saying, most of the stuff that we think we want, we think if we get those things, we'll have the peace, right? So ultimately what we want is peace, but we think those things are going to, okay, you've already arrived at where you're trying to get all the stuff to go. You know what I'm saying? It's like if you have peace right now, then you've already achieved what you think that thing is going to achieve for you without having to go through all that trouble. Then it becomes a matter of, that'd be nice if I had that, but I'm going to be okay if I don't have that. And then your life becomes more like, I'm going to see what I can create just for the fun of creating. Mm-hmm. More so than, I'm going to create this because this is going to be a reflection of my value as a person. That's two different. So people think if you take this attitude that you won't produce, it's just the opposite. It's just, you'll start to see what you're made out of, what you can accomplish. Because you won't go commit suicide if it don't work out. Because you got peace anyway. So if it don't work out, you go, okay, I gave that a good shot. That didn't work out, you know, but it's not a reflection of my value as a person. So I don't have to go through, you know, 2 years of therapy because it didn't work out. You know, it's okay. I tried it. It didn't work, you know, because I have peace. So, you know, so, yeah, we're going to have everything we want, but we're going to be okay either way it goes. We're not going to lose our center, and that's going to be the cool part. That's the part that turned me on. So, tomorrow 12 noon is another class at the Unity Temple, and Thursday night at 7, and 1 o'clock on Sunday. So we're getting ready to do what? Go back out in the lab and see if we can see which level of teaching we're gonna be on today.